Welcome to Love Your Heart, brought to you by Cleveland Clinic's Seidel and Arnold Miller Family Heart, Vascular, and Thoracic Institute. These podcasts will help you learn more about your heart, thoracic, and vascular systems, ways to stay healthy, and information about diseases and treatment options. Enjoy.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Sean Lydon. I'm the current chairman of vascular surgery at the Cleveland Clinic, and joining me today is my colleague, Scott Cameron, who is the new head of vascular medicine at the Cleveland Clinic. And we're just going to talk a little bit today about aneurysm disease because it's generally a topic that can be very terrifying to patients. And depending on where it is, there's a lot we can actually relay. Scott, why don't you start off with maybe a comment or two about aneurysm patients, like who gets them, who we need to look for in them, and how we find them.
Sure. Thanks, Dr. Lydon. So I typically find that patients that present with aneurysms, they can be in any blood vessel, but quite often it's the aorta, one of the main blood vessels going through the body. And truthfully, in my practice, a lot of them are found incidentally. They've had an imaging scan for some reason that's not related to the blood vessel. And then the question naturally becomes, well, what do I do with this information? What is the growth trajectory of this aneurysm based on the size? Is there a medical treatment for it? Or in fact, do I need surgery? And those are excellent questions. And I think that they can cause undue anxiety for good reasons in patients. Certainly, reading certain things on the internet can make one a little bit concerned. And so in the Heart, Vascular, and Thoracic Institute, physicians like myself, who are trained in vascular medicine, cardiology, and surgeons like Dr. Lydon, really work in a multidisciplinary manner. We have a real team of experts, and we basically collectively make the decisions that are best for the patient, including screening and medical management.
I think that's a great point, and when we look at aortic aneurysms, they can happen in several places in the body. They can happen in the ascending aorta, where really they'll be evaluating whether or not the heart valves are involved, and that would be a decision joint between the cardiac surgeons and the cardiologist. But in the thoracic aorta, just distal to the left arm artery or in the chest, interesting enough, they generally have a genetic predisposition. And so many times we'll send those patients for genetic counseling to figure out, is there a genetic predisposition in their families? And then those aneurysms tend to happen about equally in men and women. And then when we get to the abdominal aorta, it has a very male determination, which is four times more common in men than women. But all these are really related to smoking. And so maybe, Scott, you want to comment on when we see a patient with aneurysm disease, besides the aneurysm and whether it should be treated or not, what are the other things we try and take the opportunity to address in terms of lowering the risk and improving their overall longevity?
Yeah, it's a really important question, Dr. Lydon. And one of the things that I find is that, just as you said, the aneurysms that people have in the aorta, the area below the diaphragm, there's three groups of people. Overwhelmingly in my practice, I find that they're atherosclerotic. So patients have an underlying hardening of the arteries, remodeling of the arteries. And if you see that in the aorta and it's been enough to cause an aneurysm, what I typically find is that there's another blood vessel bed, another vascular bed that has the same issue. And in my practice, it tends to be the heart. So one of the things that we quite often see is that patients that have an aneurysm in the aorta also have some disease in the arteries in the heart, the coronary arteries, and they're not aware of that. Sometimes we see that patients have got disease in blood vessels in the brain or the blood vessels going to the brain, the carotid arteries, as I'm sure you also see in your practice. And so the question then becomes, if it's atherosclerosis and hardening, certainly smoking is a risk factor. But the other risk factors that I often see and quite often spend a lot of time treating is I find that the patients have high blood pressure, just as you find in clinic. And when the pressure is high inside the blood vessel that may have a region of the wall that's slightly weak, it stands to reason that that might be something that could accelerate the aneurysm, the growth of the aneurysm. And so I take control of blood pressure extremely seriously. And certainly in the medical phase before a patient requires surgery, Those are things that we can manage not only just by in-visit encounters, we can also manage by virtual visits. We're doing a lot more of them just in the COVID-19 era, unfortunately. But I'd say that those patients that have issues with high blood pressure, we can serve quite well even with virtual consultations. It doesn't always require an in-person consultation.
I think that's a great point, Dr. Cameron. I think the key thing is, as you pointed out earlier, most of these are incidental findings. You may have had back pain or abdominal pain or a cough, get an ultrasound or a CAT scan that reveals this. And the first thing is when people hear they have an aneurysm, it's very scary. And really, I try and explain to people what an aneurysm is. Well, every blood vessel has a normal size. And if it gets 50% larger than normal, we call it an aneurysm. And really, we try and individualize when you need it fixed. And it's really, what is the risk of that aneurysm? And then what is the risk of the treatment? And there are societal guidelines based on whether there's valve disease, the size of the aneurysm, and in terms of how often it needs checked and when it should undergo treatment. I think one of the key things is that we've seen in the last decade a growth of the minimally invasive or catheter-based treatments to treat these aneurysms. And we've led a large number of trials here at the clinic to develop those technologies and really to push them forward so that at least half the patients we see, all the way from their heart valve all the way down to their groin, have options of an endovascular treatment and do very well with really less invasiveness, a quicker recovery with really the same longevity. But I think the question people always ask me is, well, what do I need to tell my kids? Why did I get this? And maybe Dr. Cameron, you can talk about some of the gaps we have in our knowledge and what are the things that we're working on together to help better understand who gets these aneurysms and how we can predict whether they grow fast or need treated sooner.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting question. And it's a natural question for somebody who has children or somebody who has brothers and sisters, what is the likelihood that there's a heritable component to it? Now, there are certainly some aneurysms. In fact, I saw a patient with this last week that had an aortic aneurysm. But based on a very careful physical exam, which is something we do recommend for the first visit, you can sometimes be given clues on the exam that it might not be caused by hardening of the arteries or risk factors, but there may be something wrong with the structural proteins within the blood vessel wall. And in the case of this patient recently, we diagnosed with Lewis Dietz syndrome, which is extraordinarily rare. And Lewis Dietz syndrome is a heritable disorder. We do know a little bit about the genetics, and we're really fortunate at the Cleveland Clinic that we can really build on the armamentarium of clinical geneticists, clinical counselors, genetic counselors, as well as physicians and surgeons. And in this particular case, I did recommend that this patient have their child screened, and it turns out that the child also had Lewis Dietz syndrome and has since become a patient of mine. So that's a classic example of just a clue on the physical exam and just not paying attention to an image. You can sometimes pick up other things in the patient. Now, one thing that Dr. Lydon and I have certainly been working on in the last year is trying to figure out, is there a blood test or some kind of marker that's not an imaging study that might tell us, just by a blood sample, is this a patient that we can tell might have a fast-growing aneurysm or a slow-growing aneurysm? And that's the one thing that I would say that patients tend to worry about. Well, it turns out that there are actually a couple of markers that we found, and we've started to enroll patients. We've actually enrolled 212 patients in the last 12 months. And we're using those samples, which are blood draws at the same time as routine clinical care. It's free, it's not part of the patient's medical record, but it's allowing us to learn and actually develop what could be one of the first blood tests to predict this is how fast an aneurysm would grow. And that certainly gives us a little bit of a heads up, because I'm sure, Dr. Lydon, you must have been in the situation at this point in your career where an aneurysm's grown faster than what we might have predicted, and the patient then presents at the time with a dissection or even worse, a rupture, which is a bona fide surgical emergency. And I wonder if you could maybe tell us some of the things that we could do as physicians and that we continue to do to prevent that from happening.
You know, I think the first thing is awareness. As you pointed out, you know, patients always say, well, should I be concerned? Why should I be concerned? And so if you've had a first degree relative, a brother, a sister, a mother, a father, a child with an aneurysm, you probably should get checked. If it's an aneurysm in the chest, it's a 50% chance it might be spread to you. If it's in the abdominal aorta, it's maybe only 15%. But I think the other thing is once you know you have it, engaging in routine follow-up, making sure it's not growing faster, and then as Dr. Cameron pointed out, controlling those risk factors. And I think that's one of the things we really try and stress here is getting people to stop smoking, to control their blood pressure. Those are directly correlates with how fast the aneurysms grow, their risk of rupture. And really, you know, when people know about it, and if it were to have a dissection or a rupture, it's a lot easier to treat if you've had some prior imaging. There's nothing tougher than, you know, patient has their first presentation and it's a rupture and the aneurysm is 8-9 centimeters and may have existed in the patient for 3 to 5 years before anybody knew about it when it presented with a catastrophic problem. And I think that awareness is something we're pretty proud of. Just yesterday, Governor DeWine in Ohio signed a bill that starting every February 13th, it'll be Aortic Awareness Day. In September, there's an Aortic Awareness Week. And I think the key thing is just having that awareness. If you're older than 65 and you're a man and you've smoked, you're welcome to Medicare physical. We'll get an abdominal aneurysm screening. But if you have a family history, generally most insurance companies will cover when the physician documents you have risk. So maybe any other closing thoughts in terms of things with the common questions we get asked for our patients and our families when they come see us with these problems?
Dr. Cameron? A question that I get asked quite a lot, Dr. Lyon, I'd be interested to hear your perspective if patients ask this in the surgeon's office, is if I have an aneurysm that may be small or large, but it's about to become weaker and might develop a tear or a dissection, or the worst case scenario is it develops a rupture where the blood vessel can actually split, what would that feel like? And one of the things that I've told patients, because I've seen this in my practice, patients sometimes present with abdominal pain, they sometimes present with back pain, but having taken care of, oh, I don't know how many patients with heart attacks, I tell them that with a dissection or rupture, it's very different. It usually comes on like that, just all of a sudden, and your body knows. You might not know what it is, but you know what your body feels. And if you have an aneurysm, that would be a go to the emergency room kind of situation. It's not like heart pain. Heart pain, if there's not enough blood supply getting to the heart, almost reproducibly in most patients, what I find is that if they exert themselves, the symptoms will get worse. If they rest, the symptoms get better. I find that the patients that I've seen with aortic dissection and rupture, it comes on abruptly. But what I will also tell you, so I have seen patients present in the emergency room, even with findings on the electrocardiogram that can make it look like a heart attack, but it actually was an aortic rupture. And so one of the things I always encourage patients to do if they know that they have an aneurysm, even if it's being tracked, is that if they can make sure that they know where their closest hospital is, we're fortunate, as I'm sure you'll attest to, this is a center of excellence where we're used to seeing very complicated cases and we're used to handling them. But just sort of knowing what they might do if they feel those symptoms come on abruptly. I'm not sure if you have a similar thing that you might tell patients in clinic.
Yeah, when we see patients with aneurysms, especially for an abdominal aneurysm, and we say it can present with severe abdominal pain or back pain, and that, you know, a lot of the patients who we see with this are older than 65. They may have some spine disease. They may have some other chronic abdominal aches and pains. And they say, well, how will I know this, you know, this is my aneurysm as opposed to I've had some diverticulitis and some inflammatory disorders of my colon or I have a bad back. And I think the one thing I uniformly say is that, you know, this will feel very different than any pain you've ever had. As Dr. Cameron brought on, it's a very abrupt onset. It's very severe, you know. I would uniformly say that patients, it'll be different than the usual pains they get in terms of having a bad back or some chronic abdominal pain. And it's not one of those where you're sitting around saying, oh, is that my aneurysm? Maybe I should go to the ER today. And so I reassure patients that, you know, when they have normal aches and pains, those are normal aches and pains. When you have pain, when your aneurysm is either dissecting or rupturing, it is much, much more intense. And I've, you know, and anytime we've had a patient have that happen, you know, they all describe that it was completely worse, completely different. And there was no question in their mind that this was something I had to go to the ER. And so I reassure them that the normal aches and pains are not a problem. And that once their aneurysm is at a size where the risk of that aneurysm exceeds the risk of us repairing it, that we will want to guide guide them through the best way to repair it, whether it's a traditional open surgery or a minimally invasive repair, and make sure that that repair lasts for a lifetime. And I think the thing we know here is we have very, very good outcomes, and the fact that we take care of this a team approach and really assess what other cardiovascular issues they have, whether it's heart disease or cerebrovascular disease, because the biggest thing, if outside of the aneurysm rupturing, that really leads to death of our patients is heart attack and stroke, and really blood pressure control and smoking cessation are the two things that actually help with that. And then you add upon that cholesterol control, and it's really key for all these patients, including all of our patients with aneurysms.
Yeah, Dr. Lydon, I wonder if I could ask you, just in general terms, a patient or two that might stick in your memory as to this is a classical story where you should make patients aware of aneurysms. And one I just thought of was a gentleman who I had treated for heart disease for a number of years. And he had a little bit of peripheral vascular disease. His blood pressure was well controlled. And it suddenly occurred to me at his clinic visit, I had a mixed practice then, in fact, cardiology and vascular medicine. Now, as you know, I almost exclusively focus on vascular medicine, since I'm most passionate about that. It occurred to me this patient was 66, and it occurred to me that I had been completely unable to get him to stop smoking, no matter what I did. And so I mentioned to him, you know, you're 66, active smoker, and you're welcome to Medicare package, as you said. You have a one-time screen. He had no symptoms. His physical exam was normal. And so I did the screening ultrasound in his abdomen and got a call from the lab. He had a 7.6 centimeter dissecting aneurysm with a luminal thrombus. And the one thing that I took away from that was the screening guidelines are there for a reason. So if you know, particularly if you're male and you've smoked and you're 65 or older, you should get screened. But the second thing I took away from it was this was quite different from the heart attack he'd had previously. He just stopped smoking. He had failed every pharmacological therapy we had tried. He just didn't want to do it. And his question to me was, you know, what made you look? And I said, well, there's a guideline for it, and that's why we looked. And he said to me, after I found out I had that in there, this thing brewing, he said, it was enough. I never went back to cigarettes again. And, you know, he just kind of always stuck with me as one of a sort of more dramatic case where he didn't have any symptoms. I wonder if you've had any patients like that, Dr. Lydon.
You know, I literally just had an experience literally in the last 2 weeks. We've worked with pretty much all the companies to help bring many of the current devices on the market to trial. And one of the former marketing managers for one of the medical device companies called me and said her grandfather had a fall and had a CAT scan and found a very large 8.5 centimeter aneurysm. And, you know, she never really thought to think that maybe someone in her family would have this disease process, that she, you know, worked for a company that was developing these devices. And, you know, and really just, you know, the aha that, you know, grandfather had smoked his whole life. He was now in his 80s. He was otherwise perfectly healthy. And if he hadn't had this fall, this large aneurysm would not have been found and would have more than likely been his cause of death. At 8.5 centimeters, it had about a 30% chance per year risk it was fixed. He had his heart evaluated and had it fixed in Florida 2 days later. But, you know, just really, you know, she called me from the work we did helping to get their devices approved, saying, you know, wow, I really never dawned on me that I might have my own family member had this. And, you know, even though she'd been to events and we've talked about there's free screening and that it could be paid for, she never really thought to go home and say, well, hey, how about my dad and my grandfather? And after she let me know her grandfather did well, I said, well, dad's above 65. He needs to go get his test now, too. And so does all the brothers and sisters. And so I think, you know, you really have those sort of aha moments where, you know, they're just found incidentally and you really continue to do well. And the sort of really the bad moments are when you have a patient who might have been told about it, but then forgot or didn't seek follow-up, and they had something that may have been really treated well with very little risk as an elective fashion that presents ruptured and you're unable to save them. I had a patient about 6 months ago who had been told he had an aneurysm and decided it didn't need addressed and sort of forgot about it until it presented ruptured. And, you know, we got him all the way to the OR here and just couldn't get him through it because of, you know, the degree of shock from the bleeding. And so the key is thinking about it, getting it looked at, and getting it treated before it's a really big problem. So with that, I really want to thank those people who have watched this. And, you know, at the clinic, we really pride ourselves of really working together collaboratively between the vascular medicine department, the vascular surgery department, and we have hope that you look at our resources on the web if you have questions in the future, or come see us someday.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. We welcome your comments and feedback. Please contact us at heart@ccf.org. Like what you heard? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, or listen at clevelandclinic.org/loveyourheartpodcast.